Welcome back to this broadcast of the Sports Ball Championships 20XX. I'm your host, Taylor, and I'm joined by Casey, who is going to participate in the annual running of the linebackers.
What?
Are you ready, Casey?
Yeah.
Have at it, boys! And now we'll pause for station identification.
Like this, just when you thought it was safe to get alive, the group from out your backyard is about. I know you're all thinking that it's about time. Fuck your weak style, sucker. It's about rhymes. I'm back on my grind now. We're back to living lavish. Treat my body well, eating green beans. And
hello, everybody, live from the hospital outside of Atlanta, Georgia, where I was dragged to and then left outside of, only to be found the following morning and given a kidney transplant. I'm your host, Casey, and welcome to a new episode of Geeks at College.
Heyo.
And I'm joined by...
Me? Are you joined...
Say something, anybody.
Something, anybody.
Screw you, I'm firing you. Okay, you're fired, and I'm bringing in Steven.
But I'm gonna still be here. I'm recording this.
Casey, any comment on just how silent that stampede was that dragged you?
Damn it, Steve! We're gonna fix it in post. God damn it! Just gotta ruin the illusion.
That's it.
You're the anti-prestige.
That's it. We have to go back to the very beginning. Not the beginning of this episode. Start over. We have to start over the entire podcast. Going back to episode one.
Casey, we have to go back. We have to go back. Lost theme.
Thud.
Dun.
Right. I would have loved it if at the end of the last episode Lost, instead of having to... It was just Damon Lindelof going, thud.
Fart. Like Okay. So we're going to talk about this episode, Casey.
Well, we've been thinking, hey, there's an Academy Awards this year.
Hey, it's like... I mean, when was the last time that happened?
Oh, yeah, 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah. People just keep supporting it every year, man. Keep, like...
And you have to support it. If you don't support it this year, it might not happen next year.
Jesus Christ. 87 times people just fucked up and didn't learn from their previous mistakes and just keep doing the Oscars.
No, that's the thing that gets me, is that every year you hear somebody go, that's it, the Oscars have jumped a shark. I cannot take them seriously anymore. It's like, isn't that what you said last year?
I mean, they're written by Bruce Valanche, so they've jumped the shark. They, like, started by being, like, jumping the shark. I think they jumped the shark before Fonzie did. So.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, before Fonzie jumped the shark, the phrase was, host the Oscars.
I mean, we all know what Bruce Valanche looks like, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically adult Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
Who jumped the shark. He made that show Jump the Shark, right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just, you know, sit there and look pretty, Casey.
I heard that was the original title of Jaws, but they didn't like the happy ending.
Jump the Shark.
Yeah, when Roy Scheider jumps over the shark on the corpse of Robert Shaw.
Oh, man, that would have made Jaws the Revenge so much better.
Jaws Revenge brings a whole new level to the media of Jump the Shark.
Where Michael Caine jumps the shark, or Michael Caine.
Michael Caine jumps the shark, and he doesn't even look like he's covered in water by the end.
I love, one of my favorite things about Jaws 4 is that it's not like that was Michael Caine starting out. It's like, he was a known actor.
Well, Taylor, he won an Oscar the same year they were making Jaws 4. And in fact, couldn't accept the award because he was busy filming Jaws 4.
What did he win for?
I forget, but he was a known actor, and he still did Jaws 4.
Well, yeah, I mean, what year did Jaws 4 come out?
1987?
Yeah, he had been around for like 20 years at least. He was a 20-year movie veteran, and he made Jaws fucking 4.
Hey, Lorraine Gary came out of retirement to be the star of that movie.
Oh my god.
Because she said, okay, I know I'm retired, but it's worth coming back to do Jaws 4.
And then she like dies, and then she's like, damn it, I came out of retirement for this.
But anyway. Everything about Jaws 4 is wrong.
Everything.
Honestly, I wish that we would get Jaws 19 this year, just so that would be the better note to end Jaws on.
Hey man, the review's up on oneofus.com. .net. .gov.
.netcom.
.net.com.gov. But yeah.
Do we have something other than Jaws 4 to talk about this
episode? No! This is my show, and you can either talk about Quadrophenia or Jaws 4.
Case of taking over the airwaves. So
now we're no longer geeks at college. We're Quadrophenia at Quadrophenia.
Well, we do have like I remember talking to Steven before we were when I asked him to be on this episode. And for those who don't know, every year we do the box office draft where we draft actors and we compete. You know, kind of like you know fantasy football. And the Oscars are always an interesting time because. You know, well, this is only the second year we've done it, but I won the first year pretty much solely because of Oscars.
He had four people nominated for, like, the acting categories and went from third to first with an insurmountable lead.
Well, because I had Jennifer Lawrence, I had
Bradley Cooper,
Michael Fassbender,
and Leo DiCaprio.
And Leonardo DiCaprio. I remember, Steven, when you were like, is DiCaprio going to be worth it because of Wolf of Wall Street? And I was like, ah. Like, I don't even, it was funny because it's like, man, none of them even need to win. And none of them did.
I don't think any of them did win, right?
Nope. Well, now Chris is in that same exact situation. Where... God, who does he have on his team? He has Benedict Cumberbatch, Bradley Cooper.
He's got Cumberbatch for Imitation Game. He's got Bradley Cooper in American Sniper. And he's got Julianne Moore, who's a favorite because of her performance in Still Alice.
Yeah, and then it's like, and then Casey and I have a few. Like, Casey's got Michael Keaton. You've got... Well,
and then he's got somebody in Selma. He's got David Oyelowo.
But David Oyelowo... is not nominated, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, he's not nominated.
Which is a big deal. And I have, like, Emma Stone.
And I remember picking him up just because I thought, oh, he could get nominated.
Well, he should be nominated. I mean, that's...
You picked him up because I told you to pick him up, Casey.
And great minds think like, just as some of them think of it after the first one tells them.
After I told you what to think, you dumb
butt. Steven, you know what this exact conversation is like? It's when, for this year, for the 2015 Bowl, where we have to submit bonus predictions to Steven, who's running the game, and, you know, if we get the predictions right, we get points for him. And so, I didn't do my mind right, and we were, like, discussing it. And I put fucking Toby Jones as my surprise cameo. And he was like, fucking damn it. I had him. And he gets all mad at me. I'm like, no. And my excuse was, great minds think alike.
Yeah, Casey, don't predict Toby Jones unless you want, like, possible, 75 points?
What? Okay, so if Casey guesses Toby Jones... How much? What less would we get?
I think it's 75 if it's three people.
Okay,
Steven, I'm about to submit mine. I'm guessing Toby Jones for everything.
I'm gonna punch you in the dick, man.
Well, and it's like it's not like I was just aiming to do Toby Jones. It just seemed like one of the more like likely.
Right, there is a rumor that he will cameo, so, yeah, he was a decent guess.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I wasn't sure if, like, John Slattery is supposed to play... And we're talking about Ant-Man cameos, by the way.
Right.
That's what movie we're talking about. I thought we were just guessing Toby Jones would cameo in any movie.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, I mean, you don't have to guess what movie you think they're going to cameo in.
I mean, he could very well...
It could just be anybody who cameo
in Mockingjay Part 2.
Well, he's supposed to have a decent role, that, or not a decent role, but like he's supposed to have like a role. It wouldn't. I don't think it would really count as a cameo.
Really? Because I have heard that like basically what it might equate to is there's like footage of him and Stanley Tucci's character,
mm-hmm.
like talking on the news.
Well, but that's what his role has been in, like, all in the other two that yeah. he was in as well.
But I have heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it could just be, like, in the background or something, you know?
Like, well, then you kind of get down to, like, what defines as a cameo.
And that was another thing that I was worried about with, like, choosing something. That's why, like, John Slattery, I was like, well, John Slattery, it's kind of known because there was a controversy, I guess you could call it, earlier this year, where Chris guessed Kelsey Grammer as Beast in Days of Future Past. And we weren't sure if, like, if his guess came after finding out that it was confirmed or something like that.
He predicted it before there were rumors of it occurring. Mm-hmm. And so we ruled in favor of Chris.
Yeah. But it's one of those things. That's why, like, I wasn't sure about John Slattery because it's like, you know, John Slattery has been rumored, like, or like almost not confirmed, but it's like more than a rumor. It's like more substantiated than that.
I think because it's a rumor, I would count it. Like, I would count it as good. You know, like, okay. If they said official John Slattery is going to be an Ant-Man, then I would say you can't guess him or it wouldn't count.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I thought it was confirmed that John Slattery was an Ant-Man.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I picked him up for the draft because he was.
Is he confirmed? Maybe that's why I didn't get him, because he's actually confirmed.
Oh, maybe that might have been it. I think the rumor was Dominic Cooper was going to be in that flashback with
Dude, I'm going to step away from fucking Dominic Cooper because he burned me.
Yeah, okay, so some context for our listeners. Last year, Taylor had Dominic Cooper and he had Martin Sheen. Dominic Cooper was supposed to be in Captain America as young Howard Stark.
And he technically shows up, but it's not like
as
original.
As a picture. As which a doesn't picture, count.
Which doesn't count.
And Martin Sheen had like a body double or something on the set of Spider-Man 2. So,
which is so bizarre.
I think I play this game with my family, and my brother runs the game. And I think he, I forget what he did. I don't think he counted it. But I think we were figuring Taylor got screwed over from Dominic Cooper earlier, so we decided to give him Martin Sheen.
It was
Spider-Man.
A pity move.
Yeah, well, it's the same way you decided to give me the points for guessing Stan Lee in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, it wasn't so much Guardians of the Galaxy. It was Big Hero 6. Like, I don't think anybody was really, certain he was going to cameo in Big Hero 6, even though it is a Marvel property. I mean, like, Guardians of the Galaxy wouldn't have surprised me because it is Marvel and everybody knows it's Marvel.
Even though there was apparently this, like, whole thing about, like, this rule that Stan Lee is only supposed to show up in movies with characters that he created, even though I guess he technically created Groot.
Yeah, I think that's what's in his contract. I think it's in his contract that he cameos in movies based on characters he created.
Like Big Hero 6.
Yeah, well, I read that Big Hero 6 is, like, created by Man of Action.
Yeah, Man of Action, which is a group of people, the guys that made, like, Ben 10 and stuff.
Okay.
And, and they've all done experience. They've had experiences in comics and stuff.
Well, I'm pretty sure Stan Lee looked at that credit and said, I'm a Man of Action.
Yes, true believer.
What were you going to go into when you describe the box office draft, because like now we're on a tangent.
Well, just about like the Oscars. Yeah, and how Chris now is like, because you know he's got American Sniper too, because Bradley Cooper's in that.
Right.
He's got The Imitation Game because we're doing a new thing this year where you get points for also if the movie that the person's in gets nominated for Best Picture, right?
Right.
Because before it was just acting. And now it's Best Picture too.
And this provides incentive for you know going outside of just the giant blockbuster movies. You know, if you can get somebody like that you think is going to be nominated for an actor, Best Actor, or whatever, in a movie that you think will be nominated for Best Picture, something like you know Michael Keaton in Birdman, you know, it might be worth picking up.
Well, Michael Keaton's one of those interesting choices where he had, like, you know, two movies early in the year. I mean, both of them kind of flopped, but...
Well, they totally tanked. I had Michael Keaton in my team, and then when those tanked, I needed somebody else who could get me more points, so I swapped out Michael Keaton. And then at the end of the year, I'm crawling back to Michael Keaton, going, God. Please, Michael Keaton, take me back. I don't want to get last place.
Yeah, that's going to go to Neil.
Yarp. How much, like, do you remember offhand, like, the point difference between me and Chris?
I think it's like 600-700 points.
Okay, good.
I don't think Chris has any chance of passing you.
Yeah,
but I remember back at the very beginning of the year, or not even beginning of the year, even like as late as a month or a half ago, it was like, oh, there's no way that anyone's going to be able to catch up to Casey. It's going to be between Chris and Neil, and then Casey's going to be right in the middle. And I was like, damn it, Chris has passed me.
Well, yep. and we could get into like some of the snubs because we mentioned David Oyelowo.
Yeah, well, there's stuff like the snubs. There was me kind of having myself screwed over by Hunger Games Part 2.
Yeah.
Or Part 1. Mach 1.
Mockingjay 1 of 2.
Yeah.
Mockingjay 2 of 1? Okay, yeah.
It's Catching Fire 2, really. I don't know if you guys have seen the Hunger Games movies, but like Catching Fire ends on this big sequel bait thing, and that my big like I loved Catching Fire, but I just felt like that should have been called Mockingjay 1 to end on that sequel bait.
Well, but they're different books. That's the whole thing. Yeah.
I knew.
But, and then and like, also, the first, and also first Steven,
one, the only one that feels complete to me.
Also, Steven, Taylor and I are the only two people I believe in the Western world who have not seen the Hunger Games movies.
Damn,
like at this point, I'm sure I'll enjoy them when I see them, but I'm making a point to go as see how far I can go in life without seeing a Hunger Games movie or reading one of the books.
Casey on his deathbed, he's like 94 with our red ray players. We go through the entire rainbow before ending on red. And it'd be like 60th anniversary or whatever, or 60 whatever, I don't 70th. Know 70th anniversary of the Hunger Games, like the Diamond Edition, like Blu-rays from Disney. It just got out of the vault.
Oh boy, I guess I'll see the Hunger Games now. And then an airplane engine falls through my roof and crushes me. Then Donnie Darko plays. And unfortunately, we live in a totalitarian state where at every funeral you must play the Mad World.
But anyway, so yes, we're basically just bringing up the draft because you know the Oscars are kind of when stuff gets really heated.
It's kind of the Oscars kind of mark like the beginning of the end of the game,
yeah,
or at least the nominations. And then when the Oscars actually come out and some possible more bonus points are rewarded for actual wins, then that's kind of like officially the end of the game, or at least for that year.
Unless there's still a movie that's making points somewhere.
Like somehow, like if you invested in like Frozen, which made money for like 11 months.
Which none of us did.
Yeah.
And the greatest irony of all is like one of the highest grossing animated films ever. And we
honestly, I really wish that one of us grabbed Frozen because I think we'd still be making points. That game probably would not be over yet.
Yeah. But Casey, do you want to start going through some of the nominees and just kind of talking about them?
Yeah. We're going to start off with the once my computer loads.
stall!
One of you, make up something to talk about.
The first Best Picture nominee listed here is American Sniper.
American Swiper,
I didn't
want
to start with Best Picture. We need to start us off on a small note.
Okay, Steven, you're with the Best Sound Editing.
Yes.
Yes.
Start small,
best, sound best Sound Editing, Boyhood.
Best Sound Editing with American Sniper.
Hey, there again. American Sniper, number one on Sound Editing.
Jesus Christ, it was also nominated for Sound Mixing. Was it also nominated for Short Film? Jesus Christ.
God, it got nominated for sound mixing. They totally gave the shaft to fucking. Actually, they kind of did give the shaft to The Hobbit. Why isn't that on here?
I'm pretty sure American Sniper is nominated for Best Actress as well, but I can't. I'm not sure.
And for Best Animated Short Film, American Sniper.
Best okay. Foreign Language Film, American Sniper.
The nominees for Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Patricia Arquette, Laura Dern, American Sniper, Emma Stone, Meryl Streep.
Okay.
Wow. In the Best Documentary category is The Making of American Sniper.
It's like a featurette. How about, why don't we start with like directing or cinematography or something?
I might as well start. Get nominated
for foreign language film. That's what I want to know.
Steven, do you even speak a foreign language?
I took 3 years of Spanish in high school.
Do you remember any of them? Those were like 9 years ago.
I remember Spanish.
Oh, well.
Or Espanol.
Well, fuck it up. Also, guys, I just want to turn you to the best music original score category, just so you can see the name of the guy who did the music to The Theory of Everything.
I'm trying to find it. Where is it?
It's, all right. I'll just go down for the Grand Budapest Hotel, Alexandre Desplat. Imitation Game, Alexandre Desplat.
Oh,
Interstellar, Hans Zimmer. Mr. Turner by Gary Yurtson, or The Theory of Everything, Johan Johansson. Like, that's like, I've been sitting in on a class at Skadir called Language Cinema, which we've talked about on the show before, but it lets you, essentially in the winter quarter, we watch a lot of Oscar screeners. And when we watched The Theory of Everything the other day, and that was my favorite part of the movie, is seeing in the end credits, music by Johan Johansson.
Johan, Johan, Johan.
Like, I hope Chris
Jammy, jammy, jammy.
Dude, I want to see Johan Johansson, Dave Davies, and Chris Christopherson start a power trio.
That's probably, Steven. That's
Grand Budapest Hotel, done by Rosanna Dana.
Yeah. Look at that. Steven, that's probably my favorite of the East-West Bowl is Jammy. Jammy Jammy of the Ohio State University.
There is so many of those names that just keep coming to my mind, like Devoyne Shower Handle.
Buster Brounce. A.A. Ron Rodgers.
DeJasper Probin Crux the Third.
Construction noise.
Jadingley Jamorgoon.
Cinematography.
Oh my god. Okay, before we move on to Oscars, and what was it? Stumptavian Roboclick.
Roboclick. I love how they used Barkevious Mingo as a real player, who's a player for the Cleveland Browns, and I was like, yes! Barkevious Mingo! anyway, cinematography, Casey.
Yes.
Cinematography. Birdman, that had good cinematography. The Grand Budapest Hotel also had good cinematography. Ida, haven't seen it. Mr. Turner, haven't heard of it. Unbroken was a movie.
That was a movie. Well, it's Roger Deakins. It's almost like...
I'm sure Unbroken's pretty good, but... Go on, you guys have seen the full trailers for that movie that show, like, it's somebody with a skill that they're not using. They're just being no goods on the streets until they're told about the gift they have by a father figure or somebody they look up to, but they die. So they learn that they have to use that skill and eventually win the Olympics. And then after they win the Olympics, they have to go to war. But then they become a POW after learning to survive on their own. But in the POW camp, they befriend one of their prison guards. This is the most Oscar bait movie I've ever noticed.
They give you like the whole movie in the trailer too. So
what's that American Dad, like the saddest movie?
The Oscar Gold about the mentally challenged kid who has an alcohol addiction.
And he's in the Holocaust. And his dog dies of cancer. That's what Unbroken is. But it's shot well because it's Roger Deakins.
And I'm sure it's directed well because Angelina Jolie's a good director.
Yeah.
From a little
something. And it's got, I'm trying to remember the name of the main character guy, but he's kind of a big rising actor guy at this moment because He has a bunch of other movies.
I think
movies.
That's his name, actually. Rising Actor Guy.
Yeah, Rising Actor Guy. That should be his real name. But I'm trying to remember the other movies. Like, there's The 77, I think it's called, which is during, like, the Irish riots. And
I'm pretty sure it's Vin Diesel.
No, it's not, Steve. I wish it was.
You sure it's not Vin Diesel?
I'm just imagining Unbroken with Vin Diesel in it. It's amazing.
It's Clark.
I'm going to lift this board now.
It's Clark Gable. Duh.
Jeez, guys.
You can't break my spirit. It is unbroken.
I am Groot.
We ride together.
I like to think that his character's name is Unbroken.
I am Unbroken.
Jerry Unbroken Athlete.
Oscar Gold. That's my name. Jack O'Connell, that's his name. Yeah, he's in... He was in Startup, which is like a movie from last year. It's about a kid in like prison that he got a bunch of fame for. And then
sounded like a dance movie.
It's not actually. It's really fucking. It's fucked up. Well, Startup is like a British slang term for
start me up.
It's I think it's like a slang term for a young like juvenile criminal going up to regular adult prison.
So it's not like, you know, say a young entrepreneur starting a business, you know, it's a young entrepreneur talking to criminals and doing shady dealings.
No, it is not, Stephen.
Are you telling me the song Start Me Up is about Mick Jagger saying, send me to a prison?
It is also not about a young restaurateur going to prison, but still trying to maintain his high Yelp score. So,
okay. Yeah, Yelp scores went way down in the 40s, man.
But then there's like 71, like I mentioned, which is set in Northern Ireland. It's about this British soldier being like pretty much trapped in Belfast during these riots in 1971. And it looks pretty intense. It reminds me like even a little bit of like Die Hard, where he has to improvise and get out in like this impossible situation. So it's probably worth checking out, but I was really sad that Unbroken wasn't better, because this kid was like, you know, he was also in 300 Rise of an Empire, I guess, but yeah.
Well, apparently Unbroken's good, it's just no one's going to see it because they've already seen the trailer, and that's the entire movie.
It's like, well, that was a good movie, but anyway.
actually, never mind, it has a 51% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, also, we should also point out that the cinematographer for Mr. Turner is Dick Pope. Moving on. Yeah. Casey, who would you pick for cinematography?
Of the three I've seen, Birdman Man.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably like a lock, because, I mean, that's arguably the most impressive aspect of the movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Since, for those who don't know, Birdman is in a, you know, it has the illusion that it's all one shot. So,
right.
And, you know, even to pull off that, you know, even without... you know, actually doing it in one shot, you're going to have really good cinematography and really good editing. So
yeah, which that said, I feel like in a way that kind of detracts from the fact that the actual movie itself is really amazing.
Does it? I mean, it's probably a little gimmicky, but probably not as bad as Boyhood, like in terms of gimmick. Because I feel like with Boyhood, that's literally all they're talking about, is that it took...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Boyhood, you go look at, like, sum up Boyhood, and if you ask the joke schmo to sum up Boyhood, they're going to bring up the gimmick. And now when you're summing up Jurassic Park, you don't say, and using advanced CGI technology to bring dinosaurs to life, you say, oh, a futuristic amusement park where dinosaurs are there called Billy and the Clonosaurus. And with Boyhood, you need to bring it up. That's part of the selling point. On every poster, they're going to say that it took 12 years to make. In every trailer, in every summary that you read on the internet, they're going to bring up the technical achievement. And they use that to tell a really simple story. Boyhood is the Avatar of independent movies.
Yeah, yeah, you brought that up.
Speaking of an Avatar of independent movies, Fantastic Four trailer... you guys notice that like the big accolades that they give in that trailer are from the same studio that brought you Days of Future Past.
I noticed that.
There's nobody of quality behind this movie. It's just from Fox Studios. news. Well, it's funny because
there is probably actually something. Like, you could, I mean, you could even stretch for, like, from the producers of whatever.
And I would have gone further back and say from the producers of Lawrence of Arabia.
Like, what is Josh Trank directed? Like, he did Chronicle. You could say from the guy.
Chronicle, right? Yeah.
You could be like, the director of Chronicles, because Chronicle was kind of like, oh, hey, this is a pretty cool.
It was a well-received movie, and it was. Yeah. I wish it wasn't a found footage movie, but it's good.
Yeah, for what it is, it's a good movie. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
from the future director of that untitled Star Wars standalone film in 2018 comes Fantastic Four.
All right. Reed Richards is going into space, but he's about to find out that cosmic radiation makes life really difficult.
Do you guys have, like, any opinions on the Fantastic Four trailer while we're on the subject?
I am okay with everything in that it's a really generic trailer.
It is a very generic trailer, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it shows you very little, and honestly, I think I mentioned this to you too, but I think that teaser trailers don't actually make people excited for movies. If you're already excited to see the movie, then when you see the teaser trailer, your excitement will be confirmed, and if you're not excited, your anguish will be confirmed.
I guess.
The few bullet points about the Fantastic Four trailer for me, one, it looks incredibly generic. Like, it just doesn't look like it's going to stand out, particularly against, like, say, Ant-Man and Avengers.
And now, Mission Impossible 5.
Yeah, in the summer as well.
Yeah, because I think that's within a few weeks of each other.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's going to stand out. I mean, they got some good actors behind it.
That's my biggest thing, Steven, is that these are supposed to be like the best people in their field going out and doing this mission together, and I'm thinking, why are they all 22?
Well, that's like, been the biggest problem. I mean, granted, we don't know if that's the actual context, that's the original context of them, you know, that Reed Richards is for all we know, he's like a prodigy more in this movie, like he's a young prodigy.
I think that's supposed to be the idea because he's young, right?
Yeah. And it's like, Miles Teller is a good actor. I mean, he, you know.
He's coming off of Whiplash now.
Yeah,
so.
In case you can talk about Whiplash later when we get to that. But he's getting a bunch of stuff, a lot of accolades for Whiplash. He's had some pretty good pretty good movies in the last year and a half or so. So I can get, and that's probably one of the things that I liked, I actually kind of liked in the trailer. Was like, oh man, he looks like a kid. Like, just from the few shots of him as Reed Richards, it's like, oh, maybe he might have some personality. Granted, right. I'm getting excited over some, like, maybes, you know, rather than any absolutes, but.
But, like, here, the thing is, like, the bar is kind of low, you know? Like, the last few Fantastic Four movies weren't really good.
Well, there's never been a good one.
This could easily be a mid-level movie that happens to be the best Fantastic Four movie ever made.
Well, the thing, and I was talking to Steven this, is that the first one has some potential in there. It does,
and like it captures, in my opinion, it captures the tone and feel of Fantastic Four really well. Like, just the goofy, lighthearted kind of campiness, like, you know, we're gonna have some fun and getting like a goofy adventure kind of thing. But like in this new thing, it's like, okay, they're going super serious and gritty with it, like,
yeah.
Well, it's not my thing, but again, like Michael Chiklis, in my opinion, the bar's kind of low.
I thought Michael Chiklis was a pretty decent thing for what he had to do.
I loved him as the thing.
The makeup's pretty great for what it is, you know.
I mean,
there's only so much you can do if you want to do a practical makeup of the thing, you know.
Yeah, and I will give Fant Four Stick trailer.
Yeah, Fant Four Stick makes no fucking sense.
That's basically what it is.
Hey, I'm excited for the Fant Four Stick, Mr. Fox, no matter what you say.
Like, one of the things I do have to give that trailer credit for is, like, I know we only really see Thing from, like, behind, and I guess he's naked. He looks pretty cool. Like,
yeah,
he looks pretty cool from behind, yeah.
It's, what's his face? Who's playing him?
The dude from Snowpiercer.
Yeah, he's in Snowpiercer. He was Tintin in the last Tintin movie.
Jamie Bell.
Yeah, Jamie Bell's Jamie playing Bell.
Wait, Jamie Bell is playing the Thing?
Yeah, but I mean, he's mocapping him.
No, I'm still thinking, though, like, the kid from King Kong, or Good Kong Hunting, as I call it.
Well, I don't know if he was really a kid when he did that. He was a kid when he did...
He was, like, 22.
He was our age, Casey.
I consider that kid.
So you consider yourself a kid?
Kinda.
What do you mean, kinda? You're younger than him at that age.
You guys want to know some cool nerd stuff?
What?
Have you guys seen Snowpiercer?
No.
No.
Okay, well, Snowpiercer is Chris Evans and then Jamie Bell, and it's like old Human Torch with new Thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, going back to the 2005 Fantastic Four film, the main weaknesses in that movie are probably a little bit of the writing, having fucking Jessica Alba as the Invisible Woman and Ioan Gruffudd as...
Yoan? I think it's Yoan.
Is it Yoan? Yo!
I think Yoan. It's Yoan Gruffudd.
Yoan Gruffudd as Reed, because Julian McMahon as Doom is actually pretty cool. Like, I kind of like him because he's a snarky asshole. The only problem is that once he has the mask on, they don't, like, filter his voice. So it's still like it's just a dude. Like
I would have liked to see more over the top arrogance from Dr. Doom. You know, like no one pities Doom.
But see, like I liked how he was just kind of a douchey, like he was a snarky guy doing like almost like evil Spider-Man, like doing quips and stuff. Yeah. I appreciated the effort to actually imbue some humor into him.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish that they filtered his voice and made it deeper.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it just sounds weird that, you know, he's just Julian McMahon, but now he has cool armor and electricity powers. But anyway, enough about Fantastic Four or Fan Four Stick, which all of us are like, on.
Actually, I'm always going to remember the original Fantastic Four because that was the first time I was excited to see a movie, and then I saw it and I thought it sucked.
Okay, so that's
that was the first time I realized writing can be bad.
It's like Neil's experience with like Die Another Day or something when he was like 12 or whatever he was when that came out.
And I was like 12 when I saw Fantastic Four, and I was just like, wow, I was excited to see that movie, but I did not like how people talked or moved.
Well, and you're also directed by Tim Story, who other credits include fucking Garfield.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway, Casey, should we move on to directing?
Nah, let's talk about Fan Four Sticks.
No.
And before we do directing, I want to actually talk about acting, if you guys want to.
Okay, so we want to do acting first?
I wanted to do acting, and then I was going to go through writing, directing, animated, and best picture. Unless you guys really want to talk about best sound mixing.
No, just let's do acting.
All right.
I'm tempted.
I'm actor in a supporting role. Robert Duvall in The Judge. I haven't seen it. Ethan Hawke in Boyhood. Edward Norton, Birdman. Mark Ruffalo, Foxcatcher. J.K. Simmons, Whiplash.
So have you seen three of these or four of these?
I have seen three of these.
Okay.
And how many have you seen?
I've seen none of these.
Oh.
You haven't seen Birdman?
Not yet. Dude, I don't see movies by myself because I'm lame and whatever.
Yeah, like I don't like seeing movies by myself either. But yeah, I had some people to see with.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you should.
I saw Birdman, that's it. I really want to see Foxcatcher, though.
I haven't seen Foxcatcher, but I have seen Boyhood, Whiplash, and Birdman. And Whiplash is definitely my favorite of those three, and I think J.K. Simmons gives probably his best role. Unless you count
that seems to be the consensus, is that J.K. Simmons...
As opposed to the farmer's insurance guy.
I was going to say... Well, I was going to say the 5 seconds he was in Up in the Air.
That's right.
Nothing will top J. Jonah Jameson, guys. Seriously, he was born to play that role.
To the point that they would actually consider bringing him back for Amazing Spider-Man.
But apparently,
they really
I think they brought it up, and it was like a possibility. But I don't know.
Yeah, but at this point, they're apparently rebooting Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
Which not only just because I, you know, we're the people who like Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, we're one of like three of like 10 people that like that movie.
And the thing is, I think we know all 10 people. But, but just when you get down to it, the thing that annoys me the most with that is that this happens in every Spider-Man franchise anytime they make Spider-Man grow as a character. Because even though I don't like Spider-Man 3, it's like, oh, he and Mary Jane are together. Now you need to see what they do now that they are a couple and Harry's gone. There's new ways that they're going to take the franchise.
Dude, you know you're literally describing like the fans' biggest hatred for what Spider-Man is now, which is One More Day.
I know.
So you could just start with that, where the whole controversy with that is that instead of they wanted to get Mary Jane and Peter out of a marriage because marriage is boring. And instead of like having them actually go through a divorce or whatever, they come up with this whole stupid convoluted plot about how Aunt Mary is dying because, you know, Aunt May has never died before, only like three times or something. And she's like 107. You can just let her die. Peter's like, I need to save her. And then Mephisto, which is basically Marvel's devil, comes and he's like, well, give me your marriage, this intangible thing, and I will save your old crusty aunt. And so he does it. So he gives up his loving wife that he has a future with for his dead, almost dead aunt who's going to die in 5 months anyway from, like...
What's the line from that Simpsons episode where Homer gives a kidney to his father? I think he did a wonderful thing. You drastically shortened your life to slightly extend another person's life.
Yeah, basically. And that's the whole thing with Spider-Man. That's what kind of curses Spider-Man, because he started out as a character that, you know, a lot of people related to, and because of his youth and how he went through teen problems and whatever, or like young adult problems. Right. And that was the initial draw of him. But then eventually, I guess people got the wrong idea that, oh man, he has to kind of stay that. Because Peter Parker isn't a super mature character. He never was. Nor does he really need to be. You know, that's where his flaws come from, is that he's a flawed person. You know, that's what makes him relatable. But, you know, I don't know.
Like, the Spider-Man, Peter Parker's whole shtick, the thing that, like, really made him so relatable to, like, pretty much everybody and what made him popular was that, you know, his big thing is that he just doesn't feel like he has enough time for, like, you know, a social life. You know, he has so much responsibility in his life. And, you know, I don't think there's a single person that has not felt that way at some point in their life. You know, like, whether, you know, they're going to school and they have homework or maybe a part-time job, or maybe they're out of school and they have, you know, a 9-to-5, but they don't have time to do all the other things that they want to do in their life. And
I mean, he's basically supposed to be like the anti-Bruce Wayne, where Bruce Wayne has fucking everything and whatever.
All the time in the world, apparently.
Yeah, and Peter Parker has to deal with a shitty job, struggling through school, trying to have a social life, like you mentioned, you know, and all with being Spider-Man, so...
But... Like, you can still do that in your adult life, though.
Yeah, I mean, you get taxes, tax season.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey, I would love to see Peter Parker, like, get a tax refund.
He gets, like, he gets audited because he doesn't mention something. Damn it, Mary Jane, we were supposed to collect all the receipts. Damn it.
You filed my web shooters as a work expense? Damn it!
Why? And then Mary Jane's like, "Why not go to H&R Block?" And then it's like an H&R Block ad.
Honestly, you know what I would want to see? I really want to see Peter Parker try to raise a kid.
Well, and he's done that, but they won't fucking let him. It's always been like alternate universes. I mean, there's a Spider-Girl comic where it's like an alternate reality where he can't be Spider-Man because he like loses his leg or something, but his daughter.
He has 7 more.
No, Casey. No.
Spider-Man has a lot of character development in like every universe, but the main one.
But the main one, basically. like, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man, Spider-Girl, whatever, you know, Marvel 2099. Mm. But never in the main one.
Isn't Marvel 2099 a Billy Joel song?
No, it's an actual thing, Casey.
Oh.
Anyway. So J.K. Simmons is your pick for Best Supporting Actor.
It is. You guys should watch that.
These tangents are getting out of hand, guys.
Welcome to Geeks at Fucking College, Steve.
Well, that's the thing. I'm just like, I'm letting you guys have this as long as when I list the best support actresses in a supporting role, you don't go on a Marvel tangent.
Well, dude, you're the one that brought up rebooting Spider-Man again.
Yeah, but that's after you brought up J. Jonah Jameson.
Because we're talking about J.K. Simmons.
But exactly.
That's still relevant, you, Casey. Looks like the pot's calling the kettle, making giant tangents about fucking Marvel. Anyway, moving on.
That's it. Let's all split up and join other podcasts.
What are we going to talk about? What category are we going to talk about next?
Actress in a supporting role.
Okay.
Patricia Arquette in Boyhood, Laura Dern in Wild, Keira Knightley, The Imitation Game, Emma Stone, Birdman, Meryl Streep, Into the Woods. I've seen all but Into the Woods.
Okay, and your pick would be?
Oh, you guys haven't seen any of these? God.
I saw Birdman.
Oh, yeah, you did. Did Emma you like Stone's Emma Stone? Emma Stone's good in Birdman. Must avoid Spider-Man reference. But in the meantime, honestly, my pick of these is Laura Dern for Wild.
Ooh, okay.
Yep. Well, dude, Wild actually, like, when we get the best picture, that's going to be my thing of, oh my god, this should have been nominated.
Well, there's a lot of those, like,
yeah.
Wasn't, like, Foxcatcher wasn't nominated, you know? Yeah,
but the director and actors were.
No, they weren't. Or, wait, oh. No, they were. Thank you, Richard Sherman.
Yeah. That was going to be, like, my next point. Into the Woods, like...
Well, like,
they really did themselves a disservice by not having the original narrator. It's like, oh, yeah. Like, I didn't know that much about Into the Woods. Maybe I gotta go check that movie out.
Yeah.
Nah, you're good.
Yeah, no, you're good. Well, and I feel like Meryl Streep's just here because she's Meryl Streep. You know? Not right.
It's actually in her contract that she will get an Academy Award nomination.
I know, she could just be in, like, she could have been in, you know, Dumb and Dumber 2 and she would get nominated. Because and like I know me and
Oscar nominated actress Meryl Streep in Meet the Spartans, where she was also nominated.
Going back a little bit to the box office draft, I remember talking to Steven a lot about Ryan's potential with Jessica Chastain, and how Jessica Chastain has been nominated several in not just several but you know a lot of kind of critics boards for her role in A Most Violent Year, and. When I see this, I'm like, she really should be in Meryl Streep's spot. I kind of know this without even seeing either of the movies. Because I feel like Into the Woods is just like, well, it's Meryl Streep, whatever, you know? I mean, Emily Blunt has also been, you know, given some accolades for Into the Woods, but it's like she's nowhere here because she's not Meryl Streep.
Hmm.
So...
Well, again, you know. from what I've heard, this is one of Meryl Streep's more, like, out there roles. Like, ooh, I guess she's stepping out of her comfort zone.
She's an older actress playing a fucking witch. That happens a lot.
She typically plays America's sweetheart, Taylor, okay?
Yeah, like,
we all
Sophie
know who
Story.
Really got the shaft. Angelina Jolie and Maleficent.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it happens.
You guys watch much Modern Family?
Not really.
I've been told that I'm good enough to write for it, but I haven't seen.
There was a good bit in, like, at the first or second season where, like, Mitch and Cam, the gay couple on the show, they take their kid to, like, this nursery or whatever, and they're, like, mingling with the parents. And this one, like, mother talks to Cam, who's, like, the more flamboyant of the two, and he's like, oh, I loved Mamma Mia. Meryl Streep? I don't know. And then it, like, goes to, like, a talking head of Cam. Excuse me, Meryl Streep is perfection. She is always the right person for the role. Meryl Streep could play Batman, and she would nail it.
I'm wondering if she was nominated for... Yep. Meryl Streep was nominated for Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Motion Picture, Comedy or Musical for Mamma Mia.
Yep.
God. Fuck. Seriously. That just confirmed.
You can't stop the Streep. God. She'd be streeping.
She'd be streeping.
You guys want to talk about the actresses in a leading role?
Yes. Well, why they gotta go first? Why they gotta go before the man? Why you gotta do that?
Well, because I did the men for supporting actor first, so I'm gonna do the women for leading actor first.
Why's it gotta be like a male sandwich?
Taylor! Look, Taylor! It scrolls up this way.
Because of patriarchy, Taylor. Casey, move on.
I love how he's like, because it scrolls up this way. We started with actor. We went down to supporting actress and scrolled up. God, Casey.
Actress in a leading role. We were in Cult Yard 2 days, 1 night. I haven't seen it.
Sounds like a prequel to that that David Schwimmer movie. 6 days, 7 nights.
I know. I was going to say that's my favorite Kink single, but all right. In the meantime, we also have Rosamund Pike in John Jurl.
John Jurl?
John Jurl. She was good in that.
She was really good in that.
She's really good at Gone Girl Gone.
Gone Baby.
Gone Baby Girl.
Gone Baby Girl. But yeah, like I think she's probably the biggest surprise on this list, because it's like, who's Rosamund Pike? It's like, I don't remember the last thing she was in before this. But, oh, she was
World's
in the
End.
Yeah, The World's End.
She was in The World's End. She was in a Jack Reacher.
Oh, that's right. So she was in kind of like action-y or like genre stuff. I mean, she was in fucking Die Another Day, you know?
She wasn't even
the main Bond girl in Die Another Day. She was the other Bond girl.
So can we just say, like, hypothetically, if she wins, I'm not saying she will or not, can we just say that, like, in that fight scene near the end of Die Another Day, Halle Berry transferred her Oscar-winning talents to Rosamund Pike? They just took, you know, 12 years to gestate and become, you know, fully activated.
Fully activated. Just gave her an X gene in that fight.
That's what happens when you get, like, the knife gets kicked in her chest.
Well, yeah, Taylor, remember that weird chanting that you hear in the background when she falls?
Yes.
Halle Berry's just gone full retard for the last 12 years.
Wow.
Well, I'm just saying, that's why she hasn't been nominated for an Oscar, right? Because she went full retard.
I just like how you make it sound like every character she plays is like a I Am Sam type role. Like, man, well, she has to be kind of like, she probably went full retard when she signed on for movie 43.
Life was like a Catwoman. You never know
when you're coming.
It was Halle Berry in Frankie and Franny or Frankie and Alice? That one where she's like a schizophrenic, or she has multiple personalities, and like one of them's like an obnoxious person that abuses the other or something like that.
I don't know, Steve, but I'm not a connoisseur of Halle Berry. What? I'm not a connoisseur of Halle Berry movies, so.
You both have seen Gone Girl, right?
Yes, we have both. This is my first contribution.
Yeah, see, like, I thought Rosamund Pike killed it in Gone Girl, so I really would not mind seeing her win.
I wouldn't mind. I mean, granted, I don't know. I mean, granted, I don't know how good Felicity Jones is in the movie.
She's very good.
Is she very good? But, I mean,
the thing is, you know how we were all kind of about Theory of Everything?
Yeah.
I think that you're probably going to still be about it, but it's worth watching.
I'm like, not saying it's not worth watching. It's just
it's not as Oscar-baity as I was expecting. There are moments. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. There are moments.
You can tell just from the trailer. I think my worry is that I've heard that it deals more in, like, the romance of it and right, not so much Stephen Hawking's achievements.
Well, it does, but they make it work, and it's not just like going, oh, look how wonderful this couple is. It's showing why that didn't work, and it shows how desperate they are to try and make it work, even though they know it's not going to work out that way.
And therefore, it's the theory of everything.
It's
the theory of everything going wrong eventually.
Everything put together falls apart, man. But the
So you're saying the theory of everything isn't like just an acting highlights reel? Because like that's what I was thinking. The theory of everything was basically, it's like, oh, go and watch Eddie Redmayne play Stephen Hawking. Like,
the acting is the best part of the movie.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
But it also has some good stuff with the cinematography. It has some, and this is really weird thing to say, I really like the way scenes are blocked. Like, the way people move about a scene can be really fun to watch.
when we get the
and
best.
Also, I'm just telling you guys this. After Stephen Hawking gets his robot voice, he follows his kid around in a wheelchair going, exterminate, exterminates.
Doctor Who reference.
The entire movie is worth it just for that.
When we get the best picture, I do want to, like, ask you, I guess maybe when you talk about it, like, I would like to know, like, do you think The Theory of Everything deserves to be nominated for Best Picture? Like, over
some... I can already tell you right now, there are several movies I wish were nominated that weren't, and Theory of Everything is the first on the chopping block.
Well, it's like Richard Sherman said. Is there 9 nominees for Best Picture?
No, there's 8 this year. 8,
which is the lowest they've had in 5 years.
Yeah, that's my point. It's like, it used to be 5, and they boosted it up to 10, so why not just go to 10? You know, there's definitely 10 movies you could have nominated. You could have nominated Wild and Foxcatcher or something else, you know?
Like, yeah, even if you don't think it's going to win, it doesn't hurt to nominate it, right? Like,
exactly. I mean, fucking Inception was nominated.
At the same time, look at the 2009 awards, where it's very clear the 5 that they want to nominate and the 5 that are just like, District 9 and Avatar. And so by the time Tom Hanks walks out at the very end and goes, and the winner's Hurt Locker, get out of here.
Get the fuck out. And then everyone got angry because they're less quality movies. Well, not necessarily District 9, but Avatar. Get the fuck out. Yeah.
Well, the thing about that, like, in the same year, you got District 9, Up in the Air, Avatar, The Blind Side, The Hurt Locker.
Inglourious Basterds.
Like, that was just such a toss-up of random movies.
I feel like that year was the Oscars going, no, seriously, we still like genre movies, even though we haven't really nominated many in 30 years.
I think that entire year was just a response to the fact that they didn't get to nominate The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Like, especially since The Dark Knight was so huge, and whether or not you think it deserves a nomination, there were a lot of people that did.
And I think it deserved at least a nomination. Inception got nominated the next year, you know? Again... So I would say if there was a 10, you know, if there was 10 nominee spaces, I probably would have put in Dark Knight.
Oh, definitely. I would have, even on the 5 nominees, I think that you could have done one of The Reader and you could have put in Dark Knight.
Probably. The Reader is one of those where it's like, it got acting nomination. So it got nominated. It's the weird logic like that. But
it was a Holocaust movie.
Yeah, it was a Holocaust movie, too.
2009 was probably that year where the Oscars are like, we're cool. We're still cool. We're still cool. Look at that alien movie. Look at alien movie with the Smurfs. We're cool. We nominated that.
Well, and you also have Up, which, you know, granted, there was a big push for WALL-E in 2008. So they're like, well, you know, here's Up, you know. Here's the Pixar's follow-up to that. You know, it's a lot like what Casey said about The Dark Knight. So
I think let's see even sum up. 2009 was the year where the Oscars became the rapping granny.
Yeah. So Casey, let me ask you this: you want your favorite role is who would you want to win in leading actress?
Now that you've mentioned Rosamund Pike, I want that one to win just so we can say that the stabbing did give her off.
Yes.
Now, on their own merit, besides that, the thing is, Reese Witherspoon, I wrote off because she was in the worst movie I saw this year, and she's a big part of why it's the worst. It is in Devil's Knot, that's the worst performance she has ever given. And in Wild, this is the best performance she's ever given.
Well, and we kind of forget that she's been, like, she's won an Oscar, at least been nominated before with Walk the Line.
Right.
You know, so she's a good actress who kind of, I love the way our professor summed up. She married her agent and her career went down the toilet.
Yeah.
And now the thing is, she's producing her own movies. Mm-hmm. And she was given 2 books. One of them she chose to star in, one of them she chose to produce. They were Wild and Gone Girl.
That's right. She produced Gone Girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she almost starred in Gone Girl.
Oh my god.
So,
but let me ask you this: like, legitimately, who is your favorite to win?
Are you asking me who I think is going to win, or who do I want to win?
Well, let's do who do you want to win first, and then who do you think is going to win second?
I want Reese Witherspoon to win. I think it's either going to be Felicity Jones or Julianne Moore.
I think the consensus is Julianne Moore for Still Alice, because that's like what she plays, early stage Alzheimer's or something like that.
Is that what it is? Have you seen it, Casey?
I have not.
Okay.
Honestly, I think that's
I know nothing about Still Alice except apparently she's Still Alice.
Still Alice. Don't worry.
I think the main draw is that she plays a woman who has like early stage Alzheimer's or something like that.
Okay. Oh, early stage? No, that's nothing.
Well, you saw more.
She spends 45 minutes trying to remember where she put the keys. Like,
it's like in real time. Jesus Christ.
Real time.
Actually, right now I'm writing a movie in real time, and I'm realizing all the moments of just like, oh my God, they have to get on a bus in real time. Just stuff like that. Like, I'm going, God, why couldn't I have made this movie take place in 86 hours and then condense it from there? Fuck.
All right, Casey, should we move on?
Let's move on to actors in a leading role. Steve Carell in Foxcatcher, Bradley Cooper in American Snipper, Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game, Michael Keaton in Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, and Eddie Redmayne in Theory of Everything. I'm banking on Keaton.
I want Keaton to win because it's such a cool story.
Doesn't he also play like the Birdman in his mind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because cool. I'm just saying, like, think of what a cool, like, it's almost like the, it, this is this year's Mickey Rourke in a way.
Yeah, because he is very much playing, when I got done watching that movie, halfway through I was thinking, okay, this is Michael Keaton's midlife crisis. And by the time I got done, I was like, Jesus, that's Michael Keaton's post-life crisis.
Well, and it's such a, well, because no one else could really play this role when you think about it, because it's like, why did he get this role? Because he played Batman.
Val Kilmer could have played it.
But Val Kilmer is so fat, he wouldn't fit in anything.
Val Kilmer also, like, Val Kilmer isn't arguably, like, most well-known for playing Batman. You know, yeah, like, Michael Keaton's kind of arguably most well-known for being the first Batman or whatever.
And I think something else that I like about it, too, is that we kind of forget how great of an actor and what range Michael Keaton has.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing as a comedy actor.
Because, I mean, he's fucking Beetlejuice. And think about how awesome Beetlejuice is, you know? Yeah. And then you got Batman, and then you got stuff like this, and you've got stuff like he was in Porco Rosso. I love him.
The Other Guys.
The Other Guys, you know? It's like,
I don't want no scrubs, guys.
You know, it's like he's pretty underrated in a sense, you know.
No, I'm glad Michael Keaton's making a comeback.
Yeah, it's like I said, this is this year's Mickey Rourke. It's we're just not sure, like, who's gonna be the potential Sean Penn to take away is probably more
deserved. Eddie Redmayne
is this year's.
Yeah, and Eddie Redmayne does give a great performance. He does a really damn great job.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to. It's like, you can't just walk in and be, well, not walk in, but you know, you just can't step into the role of Stephen Hawking and just give like a mediocre performance. You have to, you know, it's almost like that's where the desperation comes from when people look at it and be like, oh, it's an Oscar bait movie, because it's like, you have to bring your A game. There's no, otherwise they'd probably just like say fuck it and cancel the movie, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm just picturing like a really lazy actor like Jim Belushi.
Jim Belushi.
Jim, the wrong son died Belushi.
Jay Courtney is Stephen Hawking.
Is he that guy who did Freddy Got Fingered?
Jay Courtney? What?
Tom Green?
Tom Green. Yeah, Tom. Dude, Tom Green as Stephen Hawking would be amazing. Where he's still like the butt song that he's sang. But he's fucking Stephen Hawking. Oh God.
Jack Black is Helen Keller.
Oh my God, I'd so fucking watched that.
No, I want to see Roger Daltrey play Helen Keller like he's in Tommy somewhere.
Yes! Because he basically is male fucking Helen Keller.
It's like it's like if Helen Keller played pinball.
Yeah.
Can I bring up something here? Like, sure. I think
no.
Like Bradley Cooper, I think, is now nominated for his third year in a row. Correct?
Yes.
And I think if he's nominated next year, he ties Marlon Brando's record, right?
Yeah, for whatever that movie is that he's making with David O. Russell.
Exactly, David O. Russell. And like two of his three nominations so far have been David O. Russell movies.
Man, who thought that the douchebag from Wedding Crashers would go on to? you know.
I know, right?
Yeah.
You know, the generic guy from The Hangover.
I knew when he was. I knew he was going to be.
Dude, The Hangover is what made him.
Oh yeah,
The Hangover is a bad example.
Oh,
like I personally knew he was going to be huge when he was hunkering over the toilet and saying, "Do me a favor and get me a 7-Up."
But I hope Bradley Cooper doesn't win, because I feel like, you know, I don't know. And granted, I haven't seen American Sniper. I actually do kind of want to see American Sniper, because I've heard both good and bad. I think it's just because I don't want an award attributed to the movie that has like a 70% or something on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever it is now. It's probably gone up. But it just kind of reminds me of Titanic in a sense. Or, you know, Titanic that year was by far the lowest rated of those nominees. Not that it's not technically impressive, because it is. But it's not unlike Avatar in a way.
Right.
Like, I feel like the main draw of American Sniper is Bradley Cooper's. It's if we're talking about, like, how Theory of Everything is an acting movie, it's like, goes triply for American Sniper, I feel. And solely Bradley Cooper. Because I've heard a lot of shit about, like, Sienna Miller being really bad in it. So. Or at least generic, I should say. So.
But Benedict Cumberbatch was good.
Yeah, but, like, I want Benedict. Benedict Cumberbatch is who I'm kind of rooting for. Because to think that, like, to go from, like, he won an Oscar and now he's fucking Doctor Strange, that'd be awesome.
Well, I love that we live in a world where Benedict Cumberbatch is a major actor. Like, not even just, oh, here's that one guy from Sherlock, and sometimes people know him. Like, he's becoming a household name.
Well, yeah, that's and that's what's so fun about it, is that I remember back when Sherlock, the first season, first came out, and everyone's like, there's this dude with a weird name named Benedict Cumberbatch, and now he's been in, you know, the Hobbit movies and Star Trek, and now he's got, you know, an Oscar to his name, or an Oscar nomination to his name. So
yeah, now he has an Oscar nomination, and that the creepy pederast from Atonement's gone far.
Yep.
Dude, I mean, he's been Sherlock Holmes, he's in the Star Trek universe, he's gonna be in the Marvel universe. I mean, if he gets, like, you know, a role in Star Wars or Doctor Who, nothing's going to stop this guy from, like, just conquering all nerds. Like,
I also love how many of these people that are nominated for actor in a leading role have been or are going to be in a superhero movie.
Well, what's Steve Carell and Eddie Redmayne in?
Well, I'm just saying three of them. You know, you've got Batman,
and Michael Keaton,
Rocket Raccoon, and now Doctor Strange. You know, it's like, that was one of the best things about American Hustle, is that it starred Batman, Mystique, Rocket Raccoon, Lois Lane, and who was the other one? And Hawkeye.
And Louis C.K.
And Louis C.K., who is a superhero.
He's a real-life superhero.
And a real human being.
But, like, even with all of that, you have, like, the prestige to me is always the best, because it's Batman versus Wolverine.
Like, sure.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Steven. It wasn't a dick measuring contest, but whatever.
It was a dick measuring contest. Everything it's always is. Always a dick measuring contest.
So
it's Steven Ingham. Would you like to talk about writing in a movie?
I could try. I haven't really seen any of these movies.
I'll just talk about it.
Well, which ones are nominated?
For adapted screenplay, it's American Sniper, The Imitation Game, Inherent Vice, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. The Theory of Everything does not deserve that nomination.
I've heard that American Sniper, like, from what I've heard, it probably doesn't deserve it either.
And I'm withholding judgment just because there's so much controversy around that movie that I don't want to be uninformed with it.
Well, the thing about American Sniper that what I enjoy, like, again, not to just plug the site, our host site, but go check out the American Sniper review that they did for the Highly Suspect review, as well as check out the article written by our friend John X, who's actually a veteran, and his whole view on it. And those are both on oneofus.net. So I would suggest
cross promotion.
Whoa. This was totally planned, man. But it just, hearing the kind of criticisms of the film where, you know, one of the ones is that they feature too much about Chris Kyle's kind of his achievements in the battlefield and not so much the arguably the more important stuff of him back home and how he tries to help, you know, other veterans with PTSD, which eventually ends up resulting in his death. They don't focus on that so much. And for me, it's like, well, that's a writing problem, you know? So I don't know.
It's the same way I don't think that they got the best balance in Theory of Everything between the romance and the actual, like, achievements of Stephen Hawking.
Which is also a common complaint of that film.
Yeah, and tried to split the difference by focusing on the tragedy of seeing how he broke down.
Yeah.
And
I think the thing about American Sniper is that from most of the objective reviews I've heard, it is very much an apolitical movie. It's just that everyone is putting in their own thoughts on the film and, you know, kind of figuratively putting words in its mouth when it's like, it's not saying this, it's not saying that. It's just kind of, here's a guy who, you know, went to do his job. A lot of it has to do with the fact that it's the controversy of Chris Kyle as a person, like the real Chris Kyle, and how you know, in the book, and I haven't read the book, but word is that there's a lot of Islamic phobia, like phobic stuff
going on. Islamophobia? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Islamophobia in it. There's a lot of writing like that, how he enjoyed killing them and all that kind of stuff that's kind of borderline sociopathic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are just like, if this is based on his writing, then clearly the movie's going to have this in it.
And I was talking with Chris about this earlier today, and I just wanted to point out, like, to be fair, there's a book called Red Alert out there that's very pro-Cold War and very serious, very dramatic, that in the 60s got auctioned off to a guy named Stanley Kubrick, who turned into a complete farce.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Clint Eastwood apparently considers this a...
Anti-war movie,
Which, again, I'm withholding reservations altogether until I end up seeing it.
But, I mean, you have Clint Eastwood, who is, you know... He's conservative, I think, at least fiscally, you know, and he's come out and said no. You know, it typically conservatives be like, yes, it's a war movie that's saluting the veterans and, you know, taking down Muslims and whatever. And here he's like, no, it's an anti-war movie. So there you go. Whether or not actually portraying that message came through or not, we don't know. But just saying, a lot of American Sniper, a lot of the buzz around it is what people are applying to it from themselves, what they're projecting onto the film, and not what's actually in the movie. There are problems in the movie from what I've read and what I've listened to and heard that are just objective movie-making problems, and not so much like, oh, it says this and it means that, you know, whatever. So, I mean, it's proof enough that you have people saying it glorifies war, and you have people saying it's anti-war. It's just, it's so polarized. And really, there are people where it's like, the people who actually see the movie for what it is, the worst that they say is like, yeah, it just doesn't deserve all these nominations. Because it got nominated for a lot of stuff. Like, Best Animated Short Film.
Didn't it get, like, the most nominations?
Probably.
All right, so should we move on to an original screenplay?
Yeah, sure. I want to... Well, first I'm going to say, I think I've seen most of the three of us. My bet is for... Not necessarily I think it's going to win, but I want Whiplash to win, and I think it has about as good a chance of the five.
Okay.
It's pretty neck and neck between those. I think Whiplash is the most... It's the most commercial of the scripts. It's also but I also think it has the best structure, has the best balance to it. I think it's most well done.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, with best original screenplay, there's Birdman, Boyhood Man, Foxcatcher Man, The Grand Budapest Hotel Man, and Nightcrawler Man. And I wish Boyhood wasn't on there.
Yeah. Again, how many nominees did Boyhood get? Do we know?
I think Boyhood actually got the most.
It probably did. Like, I'd be kind of shocked if it didn't, quite frankly.
I've actually seen 3 out of 5 of these.
Which ones did you see?
I saw Birdman. I've seen Nightcrawler. Oh, wait, no, I've only seen 2. Never mind.
Okay. So would you want to see either of those two win?
Birdman or Nightcrawler? Yeah. Nightcrawler was really, really good, but I think like if anything from Nightcrawler should be nominated, it was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
That guy freaking killed that movie. Like,
yeah, that's
he
a snub
that, so many things in that movie.
We should probably talk about some acting snubs real quick.
Okay, I don't know if, like,
you want to?
This movie, I forget who I was talking to about this, but it might have been Ryan, or it might have been Fish, it might have been, I forget who it was, but they were saying that,
might have been Paul McCartney, it could have been anybody.
They were saying that Nightcrawler just wouldn't be what it is if they cast anybody else in that movie. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal just, like, he becomes this crazy, like, kind of sociopathic, like, he's just, he embodies every, like, self-help, like, you know, seminar in, like, the darkest ways possible. And he has this, like, oddly positive, like, attitude no matter what he's doing. And it's just, like, it's Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, see this movie if for nothing else, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, yeah, it's essentially what we said about Michael Keaton, right?
In Birdman?
Yeah, where it's
Birdman,
like...
Birdman has a ton of great stuff in it, though. I mean, like, Nightcrawler is a great movie, too. It's a really good movie.
I mean it only in the fact that, like, the lead actor is, like, what... Without that lead actor, the movie's just, you know...
Yeah, like, Michael Keaton, there's no denying there's a lot of parallels there, and it wouldn't feel as good, like, if it was, say, I don't know, Tom Cruise... in the role, like, somebody who's just been big for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, Michael Keaton, it feels more relevant. It has more weight to it. But, yeah, I would say it's kind of the same thing with Michael Keaton and Birdman, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty, by and large, one of the bigger snubs that people can agree on.
So. Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Who would you replace Gyllenhaal with, or Gyllenhaal for in the best actors?
Well, I feel like Steve Carell might even be supporting. I don't know. I always thought, like, going into the movie, like, I haven't seen Foxcatcher, but from what I've seen, it feels like he's... Well, for one, I'd probably switch out Bradley Cooper. I would almost want to say Steve Carell might be best supporting. I don't know.
I think, who was it, Ruffalo is best supporting?
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo. Because I would almost imagine that they have, like, the same amount of screen time. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because the trailers make it seem like it's, you know, Channing Tatum's movie.
Well, they make it look like the movie's about Steve Carell killing the guy. Like, I don't see too much of Channing Tatum in the trailers.
Yeah, dude, what the fuck?
Well, it's based on a real story, guys.
Yeah, and I didn't know the real story, man.
Spoiler alert, JFK is dead.
No, don't worry, Steve.
Okay, I'm going shenanigans on that, actually, because it's the same that happened the day I went to see The Imitation Game. It was playing at the film festival, and one of the panelists said, "Oh, what's playing tonight?" And someone said, "The Imitation Game." "Oh, what's that about?" And the guy proceeded to go through the entire life of Benedict Cumberbatch's character in that movie. And he just kept going and kept going and kept going. And by then I was like, "Well, I don't see need to see the movie now. Thanks."
Can I ask you something real quick, Casey? Do you think Ethan Hawke deserves to be nominated for Boyhood?
No. Well, actually, maybe. He's okay. I could have gone either way. Honestly, I've made my point clear. I'm not that big a fan of Boyhood.
I feel like it's just kind of like, hey, you did this thing for 12 years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the entire reason this movie's getting praise. If this movie wasn't done over the course of 12 years, people have looked at it, they would have gone, oh, neat. And that's the entirety of where it would begin and end.
But anyway.
Like, I'm convinced, you know how there's a movie, like one really big movie each year that dries up within 2 years and no one talks about it anymore?
Like The Artist.
Yeah, like The Artist, or like even Avatar for that matter. The cultural impact of Avatar was it was big in early 2010, then people forgot about it. They remembered it again when TV shows started making fun of it in the beginning of their following seasons in fall 2010. And since then, it's gone away almost completely. Mm-hmm. And Boyhood, I think, is going to go the same way. I think that people are going to remember, like, oh, remember that? And that's it.
Yeah. But anyway. Original screenplay.
Boyhood does not deserve that because it wasn't like, oh, here's the story we're going to tell. It's just like, eh, let's wing it.
Okay. Steven, did you pick one of the two?
Of the two, I would say,
I think Birdman
they're both really great writing. I would give it to Birdman solely because it's kind of an ensemble film, and you know, a lot of the characters get, you know, a satisfactory amount of like development, and
that's the thing I was gonna say. I'm probably gonna give it to them because of the five, the two I haven't seen are Nightcrawler and Foxcatcher. I would give it to Birdman because I think that has the best ensemble feel of it. I think it has a really great balance between the characters and knows what to do and what not to do. I'm not as crazy about how the ending's written, but I can still dig it.
Yeah.
The last five minutes of Birdman is where everyone's like, it's okay.
Yeah, like throughout Birdman, you're not quite sure what's real, what's in his head, or you know, if it's really happening, and the movie kind of ends with like you kind of scratching your head like, what is that real, is that like something funny or weird, or like I don't know, like I don't want to spoil it, but
yeah, since I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So Casey, let me ask you this.
Yeah, it ends with them just watching the entirety of How to Train Your Dragon 2. It's so weird.
It ends with Steve Carell just killing that guy.
Actually, Taylor, there's a thing on Clickhole the other day that was just like, hey guys, this is the alternate ending of Godfather Part 2, where someone says, remember the wedding, and then flashes back to the entirety of Godfather Part 1.
Nice. So, Casey, let me ask you this. Do you like that Grand Budapest Hotel was nominated?
I like that it's nominated. Of the Wes Anderson movies that deserve a Best Original Screenplay nomination, this is not one of the like higher ones of, oh my god, this needs to be nominated, but it's worth it. It's a good screenplay. It's well-balanced. It's very funny. I think that it's a little less heartfelt and a little less deserving than the other Wes Anderson movies, but it's still very good in its own right.
Okie doke. Should we do animated film next?
I was about to go to animated film, but all right.
Okay. Casey, I haven't seen
Lincoln. How does that one end?
What, Lincoln? Oh. Well, you see there's like 17 endings to Lincoln. There's like 17 answers to that question. There's the time where they went to the playhouse.
Abraham makes it out of there, right? Like,
Miss Hoover, was President Lincoln okay?
That's like asking, like, how, like, what's the ending to Return of the King? Yeah. It's like fucking 17 of them. But anyway, so best animated feature, right, Casey?
Best animated feature film,
which Big. Is probably the most controversial snub of the year.
Yep.
And
ask Richard Sherman
why wasn't Lego Movie nominated? Do you know what we're talking about, Casey? Yep.
Are you talking about the Lego Movie or the Wind Rises?
But do you know what we're referencing when we say Richard Sherman?
Oh yeah, the Super Bowl.
Well, but like the Key and Peele Super Bowl special. Where they have like it's a press conference and Richard Sherman comes out and it's like, you think he's gonna talk about the game, but he's like, why wasn't the Lego Movie nominated? The Box Trolls? That's just Jungle Book.
New interesting take on the Batman legend? That's what Lego Movie's doing. That's what Lego Movie's doing.
Now, I agree that that is a pretty significant snub. If I were to take out one for the Lego Movie, I would take out Big Hero 6.
I would too, and I haven't even seen like three of these movies. Yeah. So.
Well, I know people say like the Box Trolls, but it's like, dude, The Box Trolls deserves to be nominated because it's a fucking stop-motion film, and the amount of work that goes into a stop-motion movie is balls-out ridiculous, yeah. You know? And it being arguably probably from the featurettes I've seen, is probably the most complex of Laika's movies so far.
Hmm.
You know, I would say, yeah, they deserve a nomination. I think How to Train Your Dragon 2 deserves a nomination.
How to Train Your Dragon 2 is my choice for this. It's phenomenal.
It is really good.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good, too.
It's pretty good.
I'm glad you saw it finally, Steven.
Yeah, I did. I Redboxed it.
Okay.
I have nobody to see it with here. Like, Neil, Ryan. Like, Ryan is an animator, and I couldn't get him to see it.
I know, I was on Skype with you guys once, and he was just like, whatever. But,
I really wanted to
and
see
then,
it.
And Yeah, and then you watch it, and it's pretty damn amazing.
It is really good.
I think it's really good, yeah. It's still not my my personal favorite, but...
It's my favorite DreamWorks movie.
Well, it's not. I'm just saying it's... I think Kung Fu Panda 2 is still my personal favorite.
And I've actually never seen Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah. How to Train Your Dragon 2 is very good. I liked it better than the first one, and that alone, you know, makes it worth it. I'm happy that The Tale of the Princess Kaguya is nominated because... It's a Studio Ghibli movie. It came out alongside, the same year as The Wind Rises.
Well, the Academy doesn't tend to, ignore Miyazaki or whatever, the Studio Ghibli movies, right? They usually get Academy.
Spirit Away did win, so.
Yeah, they haven't won anything in, 10, 11 years.
Okay, so they're nominated, they just don't win.
Yeah, I think... I've only seen one of these, which is How to Train Your Dragon 2, but part of me wants Tale of Princess Kaguya to win just because of how beautiful the movie looks.
You haven't seen Big Hero 6?
No, I haven't seen that yet. Again.
It's worth seeing. It's just, I don't think it was anything, too notable.
Well, and it's, I feel like, do you think it's going to win?
No.
What do you think is going to win?
Me? Let's see. What Song of the Sea is that? What's notable about that one?
Well, it's a movie about like the Irish legend of where sea lions become women. It's based on Irish folklore. They did the book of Kells, which came out several years ago, which is a really beautiful. It's kind of the independent movie.
Okay.
Of the nominees, because you got Big Hero 6, which is Disney. You got Box Trolls, which is, while independent, it's Laika, and they've been nominated, for all their other movies. How to Train Your Dragon 2 is Disney. Tale of Princess Kaguya is Ghibli.
That's DreamWorks.
Oh, sorry, DreamWorks. Tale of Princess Kaguya is Ghibli, mm-hmm. And so it's the independent one.
I've only seen arguably the two biggest ones here. How to Train Your Dragon 2 deserves it more than Big Hero 6. Tale of Prince, I could see maybe the Ghibli one. But I mean, I tell you, if Lego Movie was nominated, it would be one of the top two contenders.
Yeah, if Lego Movie was on this list, I'd be like, give it to Lego Movie. But
yeah.
Without it, it's kind of like, well, you know, it's maybe that's why they didn't put it in, because they were like, well, there's no point.
Like they secretly handed them an Oscar. And it's like, all right, we're just getting the award show. That's going to be second place.
They're going to bribe anybody. Them. I mean, I just from the trailer, I want to see The Tale of Princess Kaguya, because it's they make it look like it's ink dry brushing and Ooh. Watercolors. It looks really beautiful, and I'm really happy that it's nominated. I'd like it to win. Just I think it's more about the story if they win, because it's Studio Ghibli, and they've had such troubles. The last year, kind of stopping production indefinitely on their films. Not that they're stopping forever, but that they're taking a break to kind of reassess their situation. They lost Miyazaki because he retired, though I guess he's still going to be there in some capacity. But I think it would be a nice kind of apology for the fact that fucking Frozen won last year over The Wind Rises, or anything else, when there was that controversy about, everyone, I didn't see any animated film, so I just said Frozen. That's what a lot of the Academy said.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want that to happen this year, so...
But what were the other nominees last year for animated movie?
There was Frozen... I want to say Ernest and Clementine.
Despicable Me 2, right?
Despicable Me 2. Let me see.
Was Monsters University nominated?
No. No. It was Frozen, The Croods, Despicable Me 2, Ernest and Celestine. Ernest and Celestine, not Clementine. And The Wind Rises, which, just looking at it, it's like Ernest and
Celestine. Wind Rises.
Wind Rises. Dude, I've seen Wind Rises. It was on my best of the year list. It was... Mm-hmm. Even though technically it came out in 2013, but the English dub came out and it premiered in the U.S. in 2014. Yeah. So,
We counted it in the 2014 game, I believe.
Yeah, it's that one deserved that year. And I saw I thought The Croods was better than what I've seen of Frozen.
Yeah, The Croods is a little bit better, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Croods is Chris Sanders, and he did Lilo and Stitch, and Lilo and Stitch is awesome.
Yeah, the Croods is genuinely really fun. Like, there's a lot of stuff to really like about that movie.
Yeah.
So it's got Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage.
It's got Nicolas Cage is probably his best role in a while.
What, you didn't like Left Behind?
Oh my God! Shut up, Casey.
I keep forgetting Left Behind's a thing, and then I look at that poster and see, like, God, how is that not direct to DVD?
So, Casey, your favorite is How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Of the one I've seen,
is of the one you've seen. Is there one that you think's gonna win?
I'm leaning on How to Train Your Dragon 2, truth be told, because there's not a Pixar movie. Big Hero 6 isn't the right vein of Disney movie to win. So I'm honestly going to bank on that at this point.
All right.
That is a variable to consider, too. Like, if Frozen won last year, like, Big Hero 6 might actually have a chance.
Like a worse chance?
Well, like, you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, if we have a repeat of, like, last year where, like, I didn't see any of these movies, so I'm just going to go with the Disney one.
Yeah.
But to be fair, how many years in a row did they give the Pixar movies? Which, it's not to say that it's a problem. Pixar was on a fucking roll, but... Yeah.
And like, they're the first... They had the first best animated film, or the first animated film to be nominated for best picture in, like, 18 years.
Yeah, well, yeah, Beauty and the Beast was the first one, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's Up and Toy Story 3 and Ratatouille and WALL-E in a row, I think.
Yep. I know this is another tangent, but like, can we briefly talk about how Disney is now just like redoing all of their animated movies in live action?
Are they doing that?
They're doing it with Beauty and the Beast, and
yeah, they have a Maleficent that came out this last.
Oh, with Cinderella coming out.
Well, Maleficent, like Maleficent,
Jungle Book.
Well, Steven, Maleficent, I don't really like the movie, but it's not just trying to be Beauty and the Beast. It is trying to do its own thing with the Beauty and the Beast story. I just think it did a bad job of doing that.
Wait, you mean Sleeping Beauty, not Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Man, did I miss...
Look, Sleeping Beauty and the Beast is a crossover
movie. It's like, did I miss the Maleficent cameo in the original Beauty and the Beast?
But go ahead, Steven.
We do have Cinderella like this year and Beauty and the Beast, coming out. Is Jungle Book by Jon Favreau, is that Disney?
Probably. I think so, but there's also Pan coming out this year. Oh my God!
I think Pan's a different company though, right?
Let's see.
Or is that Disney?
It's Warner Brothers.
Okay, so it's a rival of Disney. So
yeah. Basically, it's like Cinderella, Maleficent. Was Snow White and the Huntsman? That wasn't Disney.
No, I think those were. Well, what about Mirror Mirror?
Oh, Mirror Mirror might have been. Now we're like typing, like.
Yeah, I'm about to say, how long is this tangent going to be, guys?
Wow. It won't be too long. I just don't like how it feels like now they're just going to rehash all of their animated movies.
Yeah.
They
released Into the Woods, which is like, let's just fucking do it all at once.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, it's a parody of that, but
well, kind of.
Okay, Mirror is more of a parody. Media.
Relatively, yeah, relative.
Relativity, yeah.
Relativity. Okay. But anyway, yeah, so that's so best anime feature we're done with.
Best director, which will go to Richard Linklater.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
he told a kid what to do for 12 years. Here you go.
I mean, the only thing I can give to Boyhood is that it gave me a really offensive joke that I'm proud of. I want there to be a biopic of the kid from Boyhood called 12 Years a Slave.
Oh my God. I'm hoping that Alejandro G. Iñárritu, or whatever. Yeah, I butchered that. But, you know, it's like I told Steven, you know, he's done well for himself awards wise, you know.
He did Babel. He did
21 Grams.
Yeah,
21 Grams,
which is amazing.
Yeah, Beautiful, which he's been nominated like for both best foreign language film, a lot of acting stuff. Like, he's a good actor's director. He's kind of like the Spanish version of David O. Russell in the sense where it's like, if you want to get an acting nomination, yeah, probably be in this movie. That's why I guessed, you know, I predicted The Revenant, you know, for Oscar time, because
Casey hasn't predicted yet, Taylor, so you might not want to give him too many of your predictions.
Well, I'm just saying, that's an obvious one.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to guess it.
Well, there you go.
Thank you. But looking at this list, honestly, I can say I've seen all of these except Foxcatcher. Boyhood is the absolute last one I want to see win that. It's not that Linklater did a bad job. It's just everyone else did a notably better job, and Linklater's entire thing is just the technical achievement rather than anything else.
It's like, oh, you did a thing that no one else has done before, even if you didn't do it super well in a way.
Well, Boyhood is an amazing 90-minute movie trapped in a 3-hour movie. I'm always going to remember watching that movie and going, wow, I'm loving how this is wrapping up. That's really nice. I look at my watch and realize I'm only 75 minutes into a 3-hour movie. And at that moment, I'm like, oh no, don't you do this to me, movie. And from there on out,
don't you be doing to this movie. Don't you do it to me. From
there on out, it was just me going, God damn it, movie.
Over. Help a brother out, movie. Help a brother out.
Do me a solid, movie, and just fucking
do
end.
Do me a solid.
But the movie never did me a solid. It just kept going, and there were like 6 times in the last 20 minutes where I was like, and this is the end. Okay, it's keeping going. This is the end. This is the end. And then when it finally got the end, it was so abrupt and did not feel remotely like the end at all. I'm just like, fucking shit, movie, what was that?
So, okay, so who do you pick? So you think Boyhood will win?
Boyhood's gonna win.
Who do you want to win?
Probably Alejandro Giannaggio or Wes Anderson or, anybody.
What's the director of Birdman's name again?
Alejandro G. Anotrio.
Alejandro in the very, the
you
no good
into
very.
Japanese, man.
I'm bad at names.
Alejandro
gross.
and the horrible, awful, no good, very bad day.
I think
Alejandro and the horrible, no good, very bad ginger who can't pronounce his name right.
Iñárritu.
I'm personally rooting for Birdman's director, Adele Dazeem.
Adele Dazeem.
Yes. The wickedly talented Adele Dazeem.
Oh, joke of the podcast right there. They better get John Travolta to do that category. It's like, or they should do it for best music, right?
Oh my God, no. John, and to present the award for best foreign language film, John Travolta.
Oh my God, I'm looking at the names for best foreign language film.
Knowing John Travolta, he would probably mispronounce tangerines. Like
he would probably mispronounce Ida.
You would anyway. Probably mispronounce Dick Pope.
Dick Pope. Dick Pope, everybody.
Dishuki Pope.
I think I'm with Casey that Richard Linklater unfortunately probably will win. I would love to see the director of Birdman. We won't say his name anymore.
Alejandro G. Iñárritu.
Iñárritu.
Aren't those the initial lyrics to Harlem Shake?
Yeah. I wouldn't mind The Imitation Game winning. I'd say one of those two.
I think The Imitation Game, the thing is, when it comes to how it frames itself and how it tells the story visually, it gets a little bland. It tends to use a lot more shot reverse shots. Mm-hmm. And it's good at it, but I think that there's more creativity in Grand Budapest Hotel and Birdman than there is in Imitation Game. So I'd like to see one of those.
Well, and that's the big thing. It's like you got two very distinct visual directors in Alejandro G. Iñárritu and
Wes Alejandro G. Anderson.
And Wes Alejandro G. Anderson.
Okay, you guys haven't watched the Nickelodeon Ninja Turtles, have you?
No. I've seen like one episode that you showed me.
There's one of a recurring bits on the show is there's a news reporter that like always does the news, and I guess he's just kind of like a mix of every race or something.
Oh my God.
It's like he's this is Carlos Chang O'Brien
Gombe.
God. So okay.
That's just like Inyandro. Oh, it's Inyandro. Oh, Alejandro. Never mind.
It's Alejandro. We're talking
about Alejandro. For some reason, I thought it was a Y or something. It was like, okay, Alejandro G.
Inyandro. I'm always calling Bob Smith.
Well, and his last name's hard because you got that like little like tilde over the end, so you have to roll your tongue. So
Inyaritu.
Sound in there. Inyaritu. Yeah.
And then you have to put the emphasis on the A right after it. It's like
Alejandro Inyaritu.
God, Casey, please stop.
Inyaritu.
But my point is, it's like Alejandro or Wes Anderson. Like they're the two that stick out visually. So, and maybe, maybe Bennett Miller, because Bennett Miller is, you know, got a pretty distinct style, because you could definitely tell that the director of Capote did Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
But I would either like Anderson or Inarritu to win.
Are any of you surprised that like Philip Seymour Hoffman wasn't nominated for like a posthumous Oscar?
Well, what do you been into?
Most Violent Year.
Oh, was he in that?
Oh no! What was a most violent man? He's in one of those two, like most violent.
A most violent years man.
A most violent button. A most violent stereo system.
A most violent movie.
A most violent Flintstones gummy.
He was in one of those that had a title like that.
If I could find his filmography.
I'm surprised that they didn't give one to Robin Williams, honestly. Well, not surprised.
Well, he wasn't in anything besides that one where he was like...
Night at the Museum.
Yeah, Night at the Museum, and then he was in that one where he's like dying.
A Most Wanted Man. Most Wanted Man is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
A Most Wanted Man. A Most Wanted Year. Man.
It was like, yeah, A Most Wanted Man was... and I remember it got like pretty decent reviews.
I think it's because it's like an espionage... like
yeah
thriller movie, that's why.
Okay,
but I mean that would have been cool, I guess, but it's like he wasn't in it's a shame that he was like him or Robert Williams wasn't in like a last like huge movie, but
Night at the Museum
and Night at the Museum 3.
I heard Night at the Museum 3, like his last scene does actually have like a nice like goodbye scene that's actually tugs at your heartstrings when you know he's dead.
No, that's like every movie where he's gonna be in from now on. It's like the fucking ending of Aladdin where like Genie's right. free. It's
I'm
like,
going to oh, Disneyland. Man. Goofy oh. dad.
Man, the ending of Patch Adams. Oh.
Okay, so
I can't.
The ending to Flubber when you Jack. See him. The ending to Flubber when he's just flying through the clouds.
Oh. Jack by Francis Ford Coppola with just. Knowing he didn't even get to look that old, man.
Jack by the Francis Ford Coppola. So you have to, like, say that movie from now on. All right, so I guess that's directing,
see,
right?
I want to see John Travolta fuck up Francis Ford Coppola's name.
Frankie.
Oh, documentary short subject. I want to see John Travolta try to pronounce any of these names. Joanna by Anita Kopax, Tomas Slimwinski, and Maciej Slesicki.
Oh yeah, I saw that one. Okay.
I want to see him do like give away the best score award so he can do Johansson.
I said that earlier. That'd be so awesome.
Yeah, just like he goes, Johansson.
John Johnson.
No, like he gets one of them right, but he gets the other one wrong.
Yeah. He gets all like the simpler names wrong, but he gets the really complex one right. Like he does director and he gets Alejandro G. Inarritu like right, but he doesn't do Wes Anderson.
And
Will Sanderson.
And Wick Andreo.
Yeah. All right. Should we do the last
Best Picture, guys? You ready for Best Picture?
Best Picture.
Best Picture.
American Sniper. Oh, I'm just waiting to hear you guys say groan mildly. Birdman.
Yay.
Boyhood. The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I recently bought it on Blu-ray.
As did everyone, because it was like $5.
Yeah, it was like $5-$6.
The Imitation Game.
Okay.
I do it.
Selma.
The one. Okay. Now we can talk about.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
I'd buy that for a dollar. Now we can talk about what I feel is the biggest snub of the award scene, which is everybody in fucking Selma. Yeah. Who would think that Selma would be basically this year's Avatar in terms of, like, you know, being the best picture nominee with no acting? Hell, they don't even get a directing nomination. I think the only other one is Best Song.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Which, it just, and I heard rumors that it's because Paramount, I think Paramount is the production company of Selma, or the distributor at least, they didn't really handle the screener process properly with Selma.
Hmm.
So I guess not as many people saw it, but it's like, come on, guys, it's like this, it's getting all these reviews, like it's winning at all these festivals and stuff. I'm utterly shocked that David Oyelowo isn't nominated for something, you know? And then you have the fact that Foxcatcher isn't in this, going back to Richard Sherman. how it's nominated for two Best Actors, two acting nominations, and director, but not Best Picture. When you have two empty spots, and then Casey, you have some, you know, you have some omissions that you want to address, right?
The fact that Wild is nominated bugs the hell out of me, and it would do so much to upset the whole stereotype that the Oscars are just a bunch of, you know, middle-aged white men reviewing movies about middle-aged white men, because it is right up the Oscars' alley to nominate Wild, and it fits in with the things that they're trying to nominate. It just happens to have a woman in it.
Yeah, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I think that would have been pretty darn awesome for them to nominate, and they didn't, and maybe I'm just cynical, but, like, goddammit, Oscars.
Oh, yeah, I think Selma is the biggest omission to me, though. It's just like, come on, guys. Like, everyone's been talking about how great Selma is, and then Selma gets two nominations in completely, like, different zip codes. You know, there's no directing, no real production nominations for it, acting, writing, anything. So,
but did they spend 12 years making the movie?
Yeah, did we see David Oyelowo age as Martin Luther King over 12 years? I don't think so.
But did Martin Luther King eventually get Lou Gehrig's disease? No.
I don't think so.
Maybe if they spent...
So there you go.
Actually, you just remind me of the most awkward line in The Theory of Everything, because he's on the floor, he mentions the name of his disease, and then he says it's Lou Gehrig's disease, and then it's like the screener went like, oh, that's for the audience, but the people he's talking to wouldn't know who Lou Gehrig is, so that everyone else has to say, who? And they have to explain, oh, it's a baseball player. He had a disease, and then he explains Lou Gehrig's disease.
Was it called Lou Gehrig's disease at that point in time?
Mm-hmm.
I
hope they rename it Stephen Hawking disease, but hey.
No, because everyone knows who Stephen Hawking is. No one really remembers, except for maybe me, like, knows that Lou Gehrig was a baseball player.
I know that.
Okay, well, two of us.
Dude, I know that. You know me, I don't always know the sports, but I knew that Lou Gehrig was just a baseball player.
You mean, did you guys watch Sports Ball Championship 20XX? It was good.
I was going to watch it, but then I died.
Yeah, oh my god. Oh, second best joke of the podcast.
That was, oh my god, I love those freaking memes that came out from that.
I would have ran Marshawn Lynch, but I died.
Okay. I love how that entire thing is set up. That ad is apparently based around the model of Star Trek Into Darkness. Go along steadily, don't make it make a lot of sense, but it'll be silly enough, and then completely go off the rails in your last third, and to a point where you cannot save yourself.
But anyway, like, so, we can both agree that, all of us can agree that, that as long as American Sniper and Boyhood don't win, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, if I had to pick mine of those, it'd probably be either Birdman or Whiplash. But, and we've already been through my favorite movie of the year is It's the Babadook, which was filmed over 12 years in a house with a skinwear director.
We watched that kid grow over 12 years, even though he's only 8.
We watched him grow over 12 years, and the director didn't tell them they were filming a movie. She was merely scaring them the entire time.
The first third of the movie is just him as sperm.
Yeah, we watch. They watch the testicles of the father, and then impregnate the mom.
That's my favorite Star Trek episode: testicles of the father.
Yep, but hey,
all right, is there anything else you guys?
If the Babadook was made over 12 years, it would have been right there, man.
Yep.
I wouldn't have minded if like Nightcrawler got a bit more nominations, because like Rene Russo was also really good in it,
and she had some nominations like, you know, across the country too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Nightcrawler I think deserved a bit more love at the Oscars personally. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of these though, so maybe I'm not one to judge.
I mean, of them, I haven't seen American Sniper. I love Birdman. Boyhood's overrated. Grand Budapest Hotel is fun. If I had to pick a Wes Anderson movie to get the nomination, it wouldn't have been that. It would have been either Darjeeling Limited or Moonrise Kingdom or Rushmore.
Well, this is basically Wes Anderson's The Departed, really.
Kind of.
I mean, you know.
I mean, part of me is actually thinking Wes Anderson's going to win for this, and I'm going to go, that's the one he won for?
Well, yeah. I mean, The Departed, while it's a good movie, that's the one Martin Scorsese wins for? All right.
Yeah, that was just... That was the Departed should have been called I Apologize. So then,
sorry, Marty, the Academy. But
all right, then there's The Imitation Game. Love it, Selma. I haven't seen it through everything. It's okay. And Whiplash, love it.
Well, and so, what Imitation Game has going for it is the fact that it won, I think, at the Toronto Film Festival. And there's like this thing about like it's the festival that kind of kicks off award season, and a lot of previous movies I think won the best picture award at that festival and went on to win best picture at the Academy Awards. I believe it included American Beauty, Slumdog Millionaire, 12 Years a Slave. So I think there's some other ones. I might be missing one or two. But
and sometimes Best Picture, especially in the last few years when they've been trying to divide up what wins Best Picture and what wins Best Director, which I think is a conscious choice on their part that they're trying to differentiate those two. But yeah. I'm noticing that sometimes the Best Picture win can get a little weird now. Like, remember Argo won Best Picture?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, honestly, did you see that coming at all?
Nope.
Not really. I mean, I like it. But I don't think it.
It's a great movie, but you don't watch and go, "Oh, that's going to win Best Picture."
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other nominees that year?
I'm going to look at right now. Yeah. What was that 2012? You had Amour, Beast of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Misérables, or The Miserables, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, and Zero Dark Thirty.
I wouldn't have seen Argo.
What would you have picked from that, Casey?
Probably either Lincoln or Zero Dark Thirty.
Like, that would be your favorites to win?
Or that's what I would have... If I put money up that year, I would have put money up on Lincoln.
Okay. Man, those 17 endings, man. You just didn't know if he was going to make it to that fucking playhouse. There's like,
I mean, I thought for sure he was going to make it to the playhouse, but then they decided that they weren't just going to hand the ball over.
There's just so many times in Lincoln where you're like, man, that would be an awesome place to end it, and then they don't.
That's the big thing. My favorite shot of that movie is a shot I was certain, like, and that's the last shot of the movie. It's him. He's about to walk over to the theater, and it's a shot taken right out of a movie called Young Mr. Lincoln, a John Ford movie from 1939. Now, Steven Spielberg would know a John Ford Lincoln movie, and he would know full well that shot, and he would know, oh, that's a great shot to end it on. And then he fucking doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, if you take away the multiple endings of that movie, it's one of Spielberg's best movies since Catching If You Can. But as it is, it's just like, God damn it, Spielberg.
Yeah.
And I still love it, but it has so many endings.
9.5 out of 10. It's pretty solid.
This is just kind of like an offhand, just a little joke. It won't be too much of a tangent, but I remember my brother Mike, he saw The Happening, and he was like, I don't know if you guys have seen that movie, but...
Of course we've seen The Happening.
The Happening is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
He said, his review of it was, like, I have ranked the top 5 worst endings I've ever seen in a movie, and The Happening has 2 of them.
I think my favorite part of The Happening, like, Steven, you've seen that movie?
No, I have not, actually.
Oh, my God. Steven, you would adore that movie.
I'm sure I would, man. I'd love anything. I don't know if
he'd either adore it or he'd at least laugh his ass off at that movie.
Anything that's awesomely bad, man.
Like, hey, were you there when we watched After Earth? You were there, right, Casey?
I was there, because that was right after The Happening.
Yeah, we watched The Happening, and then I followed it up with After Earth.
Oh, man, that sounds so epic.
I am not a coward. And on that note, we should end this on After Earth. Let's just end it.
And the winner for Best Picture goes to After Earth.
After Earth, man.
Keep studying.
Keep studying, and we are not cowards.